You want to know what time it is? It's time to bring the rain.
Zinc Media. Feel the power of knowledge.
Welcome back. Here we are, hour number two, and it has come to that time where we bring on the wonderful Agent 0010 for the Intel Report. But before that, welcome back to all of you liberty lovers and ecclesiastites all around the globe. It is I, your lovable host, Elrod, coming to you live from the Bunker Eye studio this morning. One of the last, we did some construction thing, has been put off a little bit, so this is next week I probably won't be in the Bunker Eye studio. I keep putting it off. I don't care if they put it off forever, actually, but some things have to be done, so we'll see how that goes. In any case, it is Wednesday, hump day, September number 5 in the year of our Lord, 2018. As we hobble along here, for those of you who haven't heard, yes, one of the two computers that are still remaining in the and active here in the Bunker Eye studio went down over the weekend. Yes, the hard drive went. I've never had a computer's hard drive go bad on me before. Well, this XP machine's hard drive did. So this morning there was a couple of issues, I guess, with some of the sound, because evidently I didn't fully completely configure everything from being from two machines back to one machine properly. It was probably my fault somewhere along. All the switches and flips and buttons and things that you got to push, this is ridiculous in order to get things. I don't know why stuff. Why can't you just talk to your computer and say, this program should interact with this program, make it happen? We still can't do that yet. And we're talking about artificial intelligence. We can't even get computers to talk to each other properly, or programs, I should say, to talk to each other properly. How the hell are we going to get create artificial intelligence? You know, that's going to be a boondoggle. Any case, it is Wednesday, September number 5, as we continue on this morning. And for those of you who also missed during the first hour, we have the new Hot Rod line, which is 603-499-7325. Hopefully you wrote that down. But now we're going to try to get to as quickly as possible the Intel report, the report that will blow you away, so to speak, shall we? So let's now join in progress Agent 0010. Good morning, Agent. How are you doing? I am blessed and highly favored. And in spite of, well, the typical, you know, Wednesday morning stuff, well, I got to admit, I can't blame anybody. It probably was something, some button I forgot to push or something. And but, you know, something always happens. And I think I've got, I figured everything out. We can use these two machines. We're going to make this thing work beautifully. And then, boom, one of the machines goes down. So now I've got like two useless computers. I don't know what to do with these things. The last time I had to get rid of, I usually keep computers for a long period of time, even when they're really past their usefulness, but I know how to wipe the hard drive, but I don't know what to do with these two things now. It's just ridiculous because you're not supposed to throw them away anymore. And if they don't work, you can't take them to like, you know, the Goodwill or Salvation Army, because when you turn in electronics, they want to make sure that the stuff works, so they'll plug it in before they accept it. And if it doesn't work, then you got to take it back and throw it away yourself. So I don't know what the hell to do with these things, to tell you the truth. Uh, Okay, hold on a
second. No, that's... Hold on a second.
Dagnabbit. I guess they can't hear you out there, so now I'm trying to figure out where the hell this went wrong. Okay, keep talking. Hopefully we'll get this figured out as we go along. At some point, we're... No, I'm still trying to get you patched in here all of a sudden. No, this is no different from any... No, this has to do with the line that this is coming in on, and it's not coming... Really? Seriously? Now? This is really going to do this now.
And that's not doing it.
Hold on a second here. Okay, hold on. Maybe I need to do this. Do 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 do. Okay, now let's see if that did anything. Can you talk now? No. It is 603-499-7325, but they're all going to go through the same channel. So even if somebody else called into that number, they might not hear you. But okay, we'll try that in just a second. Hold on. No, okay. Go right ahead. Try that. Let's see what happens. No, still nothing. Okay, now I've got to jerry-rig this thing then. Hold on a second. What the hell? This is the proper configuration because this is the way it's all... Okay, I'll just go down the line. I will just go down the line then. All right, can you... This is not funny anymore. This is really some BS. Okay, keep talking as I keep going down to trying to connect these different things here, flipping all the switches on. Now, this is a huge problem here because I obviously can hear you fine, but just trying to get getting your feed into these places where it needs to go, if for some reason it doesn't want to go. Play the recording. Okay. Okay, we'll try to I'll try to figure the jerry rig system thing out as we go through this. Now, folks, Now, Agent had a great way to introduce this, but I obviously didn't have this to share with you, and it was the agent. But this has to do with what's going on down in Puerto Rico. And the Agent 0010 sat down with a gentleman who shall not be named at this point. Even I don't know his source's name. But this guy has been vetted. You know, the agent knows him very well. He knows what he's talking about. And he's going to tell you some stuff down there that's happening down there that will blow you away. And the reason is because the island of Puerto Rico, a territory of the United States, really has a unique form of government down there. But it is run by Democrats, and you're going to hear the story as I have put out a meme out there, you know, before talking about how bad the Democrat Party is. It makes the mafia look like a bunch of Boy and Girl Scouts. It really does. And it is no more evident than what has happened since the last hurricane down there in Puerto Rico. You hear Trump getting all of the bashing and all the blame for what's going down in Puerto Rico. But folks, just remember, when Hurricane Katrina hit, Who got the blame for all the Democrat failures down there? Yeah, President Bush. And even so much you got Kanye running around saying, George Bush hates black people. Notice, however, Kanye isn't saying that about Donald Trump. But the problem is, and this is another reason why you cannot allow Democrats to win. So we're going to play the first half of this interview that Agent had with this gentleman. We're playing it this week. And hopefully I can get some comment from Agent as we continue through this. I can get him hooked back in here. But until then, this is the first half of that interview. You've got to listen to this. And now's the time to grab somebody who says that they don't want to listen and make them listen. This is about Puerto Rico and what is still going on down there. And you will not believe your ears. I left this in there for effect, by the way. Why is the phone ringing?
Good afternoon, 0010.
Good afternoon, and hello, everyone. The voice you just heard was a very good friend of mine. Now, before I introduce you to my friend, allow me to give you a little bit of a background history on him. He was in the United States military, and he became an officer, but he did it the hard way. He went in as enlisted, went to college, got his degree, and became an officer. He retired from the United States military, like I said, as an officer, and went into emergency management. What part of emergency management? That's none of your business, because I'm going to protect him. I like him. In general, I don't like human beings. I just like humanity. But him, I like him. Despite the fact that he's a Dallas Cowboys fan, I'll overlook that every time, because he's a great guy. And I'm not going to give you his real name, but we're just going to go with the name D, as in Dallas. And no, I'm not going to call you Big D. Get that out of your mind right now. So, moving along, did I get your career correct?
You did.
Spot on. Oh, outstanding. Now, how you doing, D?
Good. Yourself?
Oh, glorious. Total grooviness in my life. Can't you tell? Anyway.
Absolutely.
Dripping with sarcasm. But anyway, now, first thing we want to talk, we're going to talk about the hurricane in Puerto Rico and the devastation and the havoc that it wreaked. But you know what? We're going to cover a few things first. We're going to discuss about Puerto Rico itself, the geography, the demographics, the political environment, so on and so forth. Now, the first thing I want to say, what is the demographics of Puerto Rico, poverty, education, poverty versus wealth, so on and so forth?
Well, the demographics of Puerto Rico is a fairly poor country. They're a commonwealth as far as some of our other commonwealths go. There's, you know, really the haves, the have-nots that make up the population. The island itself has a spiny backbone of a big gigantic mountain that runs down through the middle, with a tropical rainforest on the eastern end, and you know, just basically a kind of a subtropical forest the rest of the way across the center of the country, and therefore it's very diverse climatology for Puerto Rico. On the south side of the island, it's very green, lush. On the north side of the island is very green, lush, and on the south side, it almost has some areas almost are like in the center part of the country is almost like Arizona. It's almost a desert type environment, just because of the way the storm systems move up through the Caribbean. Mm. It tends not to get a lot of rain in that south central region of the country. Mm. But, you know, there's a few beaches, not the world's greatest beaches, nowhere near in comparison to, say, Hawaii or Guam or something like that, where you have vast amount, you know, everywhere, every island has beautiful beaches. There are a couple islands off the eastern coast of Puerto Rico, Vieques being one of them. It used to be a military range for the Navy back in the day. And that is, you know, has some beautiful beaches on it.
Hmm.
But then when you get to, you know, the San Juan, I mean, San Juan is like any other major city around the world. There's a lot of poverty. A lot of people all crammed together in a small amount of space. But Puerto Rico has a crumbling infrastructure, you know, that was been in decline for decades.
Now, when you say a crumbling infrastructure, okay, because that is something that I wanted to get into. Now, when you say crumbling infrastructure, as in, like, what is, like, how many major roads do they have as opposed to dirt roads? How many, what are the power plants? What were the condition of the power plants when the federal government got there?
Well, there's, for the road section, there's a major road that runs, Highway 2 runs along the northern coast from San Juan over toward about three quarters of the way around the north side of the island going westward. And it goes just a little bit east. Then it turns into basically a two-lane road, and those roads are filled with potholes. And, you know, decades ago I was in Puerto Rico, and you know, it's unbelievable. A lot of potholes, a lot of roads. When it rains, the roads have a tendency to wash out. And you get up into the mountains, very limited infrastructure. The roads are prone to being with mudslides and a lot of other smaller roads that, you know, getting into the very interior part up in the mountainous region, especially kind of the central and western portions of the mountains, it's very isolated. And those people are very poor. A lot of you know, brownouts from time to time. There were two major power plants that were in the country, that one of which was out of commission due to parts and lack of being maintained, and the fact that they were extremely old. Some of those things were you know, 50, 60 years old.
When you say it was out of commission, are you saying it was out of commission before the hurricane?
Oh, absolutely, before the last hurricane hit.
Right there for a second, folks. Just, I think maybe I have fixed the line in problem, so hopefully I can get Agent to comment on this really quick. Now, he said, yes, I think we've got you back. Good. There's another problem here, by the way. Unbelievable stuff here. Unbelievable what you have to do in order to get this stuff to work, folks, even in the middle of this. But I think I've gotten the agent here. But this guy just said that this stuff, one of these plants, was out of commission before the hurricane. Now, we were led to believe that the hurricane knocked all of the power out. The problem is that some of the power was out before the hurricane hit. And there, just like Katrina, there was all this money that was being sent down there, and it didn't go to refurbishing or rebuilding the old power plant, or even building a new one, which they should have done. Now, is that the accurate picture here? I want everybody to understand this.
Okay, Ken, am I coming through now?
Yes, you are.
Okay, excellent, awesome. No, the picture is this. You're partly right when you're saying that the money was being sent down to Puerto Rico to maintain the power plants, plural. The problem is that the power plants are both owned by the Puerto Rican government, or the established government in Puerto Rico. The money did not go to both power plants. Only certain amount of money did. Where the rest of the money goes or went, we have no idea. Like I said, the power plants are, for the most part, governed and owned by the Puerto Rican government. Now, I could be wrong, but if you're sending money down for these power plants, then the money should go to the power plants because it's part of the budget. It's part of the money that's the federal funding that's sent from the United States to Puerto Rico. Don't forget, Puerto Rico owes the United States a buttload of money, and they have nothing to show for it. Like he said, decades ago, he went to Puerto Rico, and the roads were riddled with potholes. All of a sudden, when people go back to Puerto Rico after hurricane or during hurricane or before Hurricane Maria, guess what? The potholes are still there. So the infrastructure was not being taken care of.
Now, folks, why this is important, because we've already gone through this in New Orleans after Katrina. Now, who was New Orleans run by? Democrats. Let's continue with this interview.
So,
and the one that was still remaining took a lot of damage in the hurricane when it came through, and it went offline.
You know what? Let me. This is really amazing, because here we have an island that should have, and now tell me if you disagree at any point in time. Tell me when I'm wrong, if I'm wrong. Here we have an island that should have 4 power plants. It should have 4. Now, the reason why I say 4 is, let me explain this to the listening audience. And I'm going to bring down the numbers drastically so that way it makes more sense. You have 2 power plants. And let's say it's a population of, let's say, 20,000 houses. And each power plant is responsible for providing energy to 10,000 houses. But let's say, just to play it safe, each power plant is equipped to carry the load for 15,000 houses. Because that way, you know, hey, it's better to be over-ready and underused than vice versa. But now that one power plant went down, well, now guess what? This power plant that's the one remaining power plant that's capable of carrying energy or electricity to 15,000 homes now has to carry electricity to 20,000 homes. So now it's being overused. It's being overtaxed. And then when you come along and smack it with a level hurricane like the one that hit Puerto Rico, well, guess what? All havoc, all hell breaks loose. So is it right for me to make that kind of an analysis or that kind of comparison?
Oh, absolutely. And two, the fact that the power plant being so old, a lot of the parts that were needed to try to get it back up and operational had to come from other places, from Europe and some other places that you know, had some older infrastructure that was still around, or they could remanufacture those parts. A lot of that stuff wasn't manufactured in the United States.
How old were these power plants? When were these places built?
They were built probably 40 years ago or more.
40 years ago.
40 years ago or older. And these are plants that they had to get parts from foreign entities. Now, read that as foreign governments as well, not just private enterprise. So we're talking power plants with technology so old that we don't even... How difficult is it for, if you have a classic car, there's a certain age when it gets very difficult to get parts for it. Is that not true? And usually you have to go where? You have to go on to eBay or some sort of, car aficionado site to get a part for your car. And they're usually not brand new parts, are they? No, they're usually jerry-rigged, remanufactured types of things, because they just don't make the parts for that car or that model of a car anymore, especially if you don't have a popular classic. You know, you may have a 55 Corvette. Okay, you can still probably get some brand new parts for that. But if you have, I don't know, like an Edsel, a 1950 Edsel, you're not going to be able to find parts for that car. You're going to either have to make your own part, Or find somebody who has an old Edsel and buy the part off of them, and hopefully it's either been remanufactured so it'll work, or you're going to have to fix it in order to make it work for your car. That's exactly what was happening down in these power plants, folks. Just to put that in perspective, they were so old that the technology was not just outdated, it wasn't being utilized anywhere really in the Western world, so the only way they could get the part was to go to some place who recently had one of those plants, and so they can dismantle the part from the previous plant and ship it to them. Not fly it, ship it. Now, ship it. Now, I'm going to hold on for a second. I'm going to stop right here and take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to get Agent's take on this and then get back to the interview. Folks, I'm telling you, you need to stay tuned to this one.
I'm not Rod Eccles, and I approve this message.
We've all heard of male enhancement. But now, there's an expert on true male enhancement in the areas that really count. In Herb Ellis's book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, you'll find answers to questions like, why doesn't she want to have sex? A quick start, quick results workout guide. Plus, what you can do as a side hustle to make money now. With all the great tips in this book, every man can benefit. Get the book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, on Amazon.com.
Help Soldiers for Stockings improve the morale and welfare of members of our armed forces deployed overseas. Now through November 20th, there is so much work to be done, and you can help in many ways. Download the stocking pattern from stockingsforsoldiers.org and start sewing today. Volunteer to help decorate and assemble stockings. Donate Christmas candies, snacks, nuts, chips, drink mixes, DVDs, books, magazines, lip balm, toiletries, and other items needed to fill the stockings. Or help make packets of snowman soup, hot chocolate to send along with the stockings. For more information, patterns, and a list of items needed, visit stockingsforsoldiers.org. This holiday season, help send our troops a touch of home. For many, it's all they will receive. All stockings need to be completed by November 20th. So get started today at stockingsforsoldiers.org. That's stockingsforsoldiers.org. Stockings for Soldiers, sending stockings filled with joy to our soldiers in harm's way for the 9th consecutive year.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit doesn't matter. No credit doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce, it just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 7ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.7ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 7ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
And we are back as we continue. You know, you go on vacation, you come back, and you try to reconfigure things to work properly, and everything is supposed to be lined up the way it originally was, and stuff still doesn't work. It's amazing how that happens. It's amazing how that happens. In any case, we are still having... Well, obviously, I guess we had a little bit of dead air in the commercial spot. Maybe there's just something in the commercials. I don't know. Well, obviously, I can't get rid of them totally. Got to pay the bills around here somehow. Any case, we're in the middle of this interview that Agent 10 was having with a non-name named disclosed source about Puerto Rico. Now, and the reason why this is so important, folks, is because we've heard the news out of Puerto Rico. We've heard the news about how bad it was, about how much the rebuilding effort has been bungled, about how much money is being wasted or lost, about the products and goods that are sitting in truck trailers still that isn't getting to the people. How many Puerto Ricans have fled their home island and are now residing in places like Florida? By the way, there's so many of them, and it's fine because they are citizens. They're full-blown American citizens, Puerto Ricans are. And most of them speak English and speak it very well. Some of them don't. I know, it's a different story. But most of them do. Most of them are very bilingual. And they can get along very well here in the USA. And there's so many of them have left the island and flooded into Florida that they're actually afraid that because they're so Democrat down there, which is really kind of weird. Because you talk to Puerto Ricans in Puerto Rico, they're very Democrat. They support Democrats. As bad as that is, they do. So they're tipping the scales in parts of Florida. The good news is that usually once they've been here a while, especially up here in the Northeast, Puerto Ricans tend to start flipping and turning to being Republican. It doesn't happen overnight, doesn't happen fast enough, but it does happen. I've worked alongside and with a number of them, and let me tell you, I have these Puerto Ricans can be once they realize what the hell is going on. You want to talk about being staunch conservative? These people, it's like you flip a switch on them. It's unbelievable. I'm not kidding. One particular person, just remember it, you know, his name. Just one particular person that I can remember very well. When he arrived in New Hampshire, he was not very good at English. He's directly from the island of Puerto Rico. Within a month, he was conversing in English very well. You could fully understand him. His accent was not so bad you couldn't understand. It was almost, you know, regular Spanish, I guess, accent. In a month. But when he got here, he was always talking about, you know, Obama was great. Obama was wonderful. It was everything was Obama. Within that month, he's like, I can't believe I supported that jackass. Literally, those are the words out of his mouth. So now you got to understand, if these people are coming here and saying that, what is the information that they're getting down in Puerto Rico? This is the same thing that happened in New Orleans after Katrina. And when people started to realize that it wasn't George W. Bush, then what happened? As a matter of fact, people turned evidence against what their former mayor, Ray Nagin. He went to jail, did he not? So when people actually find out the truth is when things start to change. Let's continue now with this interview and conversation.
Good God. That's insane. That's insane.
And they had never really been upgraded to real true modern standards.
So basically, I mean, we're probably begging, borrowing, and stealing from other countries such as the Ukraine, maybe even Russia, countries that are still 40 years behind technologically.
Right. Some places probably in Europe that had manufactured stuff like that and still had some parts laying around and pieces that they could either gin up and remanufacture, or they could find other places that had been decommissioned and they could get the pieces and parts that they needed. But then they had to be put on ships, and it takes weeks to come from Europe.
Yeah, because some of these parts weren't very small at all.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. That's the thing. They can't be shipped by air.
So what was the response of the politicians of Puerto Rico when all this was coming to light?
Well, a big portion of the, probably a third of the debt was just strictly from the power energy company debt for just a lot of years of mismanagement and not not managing how they were going to get the infrastructure and no plan to upgrade the infrastructure or the power plants.
And what did did the politicians accept any responsibility for anything, any of this?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean,
now I got to get a little bit of agent's take on this part. So we have power plants that are, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old. They have to literally ship by boat the parts because they didn't have any spare parts laying around. First of all, when you have something that old and you're that dependent on it, shouldn't you, agent, have at least a couple of spare parts to make sure that it can still run without having, if something breaks, now you got to wait weeks to get it back up and running? Why were there no parts laying around?
Okay. Now, mind you, ladies and gentlemen, I did have a conversation with D afterwards. And one of the things that he did bring up is the fact that they did have spare parts. The problem is that they went through them already before the hurricane. They did have some parts laying around where they could use, but because of the poor condition of these power plants, they had to keep dipping into the supply in order to fix it. So years and years later, and I mean years later, when Maria finally hit, they had nothing. Now, let's put this into perspective. Rod says that these power plants, 30, 40, 50 years. Okay, sorry, Rod, I have to correct you. These power plants were between 50 to almost 60 years old. Now, let's put this in historical perspective. When these power plants were built was right around the time of the Korean War. That's how old these power plants are, right around the time of the Korean conflict.
And so they haven't been upgraded or rebuilt since then.
Exactly. They have not been rebuilt or upgraded to current modern standards since then. Now, does it cost a lot of money to rebuild or to upgrade? It costs a lot of money, but it's going to be easier to fix and maintain them in the long run, which means it will be cheaper in the long run to maintain them, to keep them going, to ensure that they're modernized. In the long run, it ends up being less expensive. Here's a perfect example. You go out and you buy a shirt for $10. Oh, look at this beautiful shirt. It cost me only $10. But a buddy of yours bought a shirt that looks almost identical to it, and he says, yeah, well, this one cost me $100. Oh, well, you're stupid. Well, guess what? Your one shirt may last 3 or 4 washings. Then you got to go out and buy another one. Well, now it's 20. Then you got to go out and buy another one. That's 30. It keeps building up until you end up spending more than $100 for the shirt that your friend bought. You end up wasting more money by thinking you're getting a good deal by buying so cheap. When your friend was the one that got the deal and you thought he was stupid, similar situation when it comes to these power plants.
Yes. Okay, let's continue with the interview.
Yeah, and it wasn't on their watch. You know, everybody points fingers. You know, when that happens, it was like that before when I got here. It was been like that for years. And then, you know, the analogy that you always hear, well, it's always been like that.
So basically finger pointing and lying, because instead of them assuming the responsibility and saying, okay, now that I'm in this political office, now I need to do something to get this upgraded. It may not have happened during their watch, but they neglected it during their watch.
Well, absolutely. And part of that was, a lot of that was due to the fact that they were bankrupt. So we have very limited resources. So, you know, as long as the power plant's working and running and, as long as we got one going, we're going to hope and pray for the best. And then when their luck ran out, guess what? Now the federal government has to come in and is going to help them out. But, you know, that's, you know, trying to string massive power transmission lines across a huge mountain range, you know, to all those little villages and all those little places in the mountains. You know, that's a monumental task. I mean, it has to be done by helicopter. There's not a lot of roads to a lot of those areas where they could actually get in with, with the type of, you know, build those towers. You know, those towers aren't, you know, it takes time to build a tower for just one power transmission line, you know, across that. So you imagine how many towers they had to build, you know, from the ground up.
Hmm.
Because some of them were damaged, some weren't, you know, and then trying to restring lines and making sure everything works.
Now, the Puerto Rican National Guard, what role did they play in assisting?
Well, once the active forces got there and things kind of settled down a couple days after the hurricane, they kind of came to life. But, you know, you would have thought that there would have been a pre-laid out plan for, okay, when a hurricane hits, you know, 72 hours prior to the hurricane hitting, the National Guard has been called up and activated and have mission assignments on exactly what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. And, you know, for example, there's a lot of combat engineers in the Army National Guard. So they know about, you know, clearing roads, rock clearing. So being able to get some bulldozers, heavy equipment in to open the roads, move trees, move down power lines. There were down power lines everywhere. And if you looked at, have you ever seen any of the pictures from San Juan and some of those areas, you notice most of the telephone poles were leaning, were broken, power lines were all down everywhere. So not only your major transmission lines were down, but all your other power lines were down. So, you know, instead of having that stuff going, modernizing it and burying it like we do now here in the United States, they, you know, because of the way some of the federal funding works, they actually had to go back and put up new telephone poles and restring above ground power lines again. And those power poles and all that stuff had to be brought in by ship. You know, you can't fly those power mm-hmm. those telephone poles there.
Mm-hmm. So nobody bothered to actually take the Puerto Rican National Guard, activate whatever elements they needed, such as the combat engineers or any aspect of the Puerto Rican National Guard, and have them on standby.
Didn't appear so.
Now, what is the political environment like in Puerto Rico? Like,
well,
the governor, he's the governor of the island of Puerto Rico. Now, obviously, he's not like, let's say, the governor of New York or the governor of California, the governor of Florida, where they basically have the power. What the hell is up with the governor of Puerto Rico, and why did he seem so powerless when it came to this?
Well, there was a little act that was passed in 1991 called the Autonomous Municipalities Act, which basically established that every municipality had its own would have its own strong mayor, and that municipality legislature would be the, you know, basically the governing body. And so, based on population in each one of these municipalities, would be determined how many people were in that particular local government. And there's 78 of those municipalities that make up Puerto Rico. So basically you have 78 little fiefdoms that are autonomous and do their own thing. So therefore the governor doesn't have the authority to tell them, well, what they can and can't do. So it's everybody's got their own little kingdom. They're worried about their own little area. And it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of mutual aid agreements kind of thing between them. Whereas, you know, hey, if you know, I have this resource, and if you have another resource, and if something happens, well, I'll send some folks to help you. And if things happen in my area, you send some folks to help me.
What was the reason for creating this act in 1991?
Well, it appeared that there was evidently at one point they felt that the only the areas around like San Juan were getting taken care of by the government. You know, again, it's kind of the typical Central South American thing. Right. If the central government is in San Juan, then San Juan seems to be the focus. And it's like that in a lot of places around the world. You'll see that the government, you know, is located in the area. That area is getting taken care of very well, and the rest of the country, not so much. Well, guess what? It still ended up that way because as these folks got in power, they just kind of ruled their roost in their own little area, you know, and they still didn't necessarily take care of the local people in those regions.
Now, there was reports about supplies just sitting on the docks of San Juan and at the airport as well. Now,
absolutely. There were shipping containers, loads of stuff sitting at the port in San Juan.
Why?
That weren't distributed right away due to the fact that nobody told the truck drivers to show up.
God.
I mean, you would have thought that, hey, I've got all these supplies sitting here, and when the storm passes, we're going to need to pass out water and food, and we're going to, you know, normal places have what we call points of distribution, pods, set up so that, okay, in each area, there's going to be a point of distribution where people know that, hey, if anything happens, when the relief supplies come, I go to this location and I can get food, water, medicine, whatever I need is going to be at that location. So really there was it wasn't a lack of them not having a plan. It was a lack of them not actually implementing any parts of a plan. And part of that was because, you know, FEMA went down years ago and helped them write a plan and basically did the work for them. So there was really no buy-in from the local government into the plan because it wasn't their plan. It was really, you know, it was FEMA's plan. But so with all the nepotism going on, it was, you know, it was like, hey, I don't know what to do. I'm not doing it. So, I mean, we saw the same thing in New Orleans with the local government there. You know, it was like, yeah, okay, man, we're not going to do anything. You know, we're going to end up sending people to a shelter of last resort, a Superdome, you know, versus sending people to a shelter saying, hey, if you're not evacuating, here's a shelter.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of nightmare reports about the Superdome, so that didn't work out well either. Now, when federal troops landed, was there any distribution of the food and water at that point?
Well, it was one of the things that they have to do is they have to work with the local government because, again, the local government is in charge. The federal government just can't come in and say, okay, you know, we're here to save the day. We're Superman, move out of the way while we take over and do everything we're here to do. So they're actually there to assist the local government in distributing the food, the water, taking care of the people and their needs. And part of it was the fact that, you know what, there was the infighting between, okay, the governor himself wanting to do things, he really did have his heart in the right place and wanted to do the right thing. But then again, the mayor was like, well, you know what? I'm looking at running for future political office. And you know what? I'm going to complain about everything. I'm not going to come to meetings. And, you know, I'm just going to be a pain in the head whenever possible.
No.
You know, for example, she was in the hangar at the airport, complaining that we need food and water, and you look behind her and there's pallets and pallets of water sitting right there to be distributed.
I remember that. Now, let me explain to the people. Now, when Dee says that the federal troops can't just come in and take charge and run the show and get things done, some of you may be asking, well, why not? Well, let me explain it to you. There's this thing in effect in the United States. It's called posse comitatus. And posse comitatus is something that's used in order to prevent a president of the United States from going buck wild and sending in federal troops without the authority, approval, or permission of a governor or a duly elected official of that state or region. So Posse Comitatus basically tells federal troops, you can't come in unless you're invited in with approval under their conditions. So that stops federal troops from doing anything like taking over any kind of a situation within the United States and its territories. So, good.
And one of the things that you know, people may say, well, what about after 9/11? There was military troops in the airports. Well, yes, there were. But those were National Guard troops activated mm-hmm. under state activation mm-hmm. by the governor of those states. And they were able to go in as a state mission and to be able to add extra security at the airports. Not active duty couldn't do it, and the reserve forces couldn't do it because reserve forces are considered Title 10, and they are a component of the active forces. They're the reserve component of the active forces. So therefore, reserve troops couldn't be used, active duty troops couldn't be used. It had to be National Guard troops activated under the governor's authority.
And before anybody asks, well, what about the jet planes that were flying? Air National Guard. Sorry to break your heart. They were Air National Guard. So don't think that it was the Air Force or the Navy flying their jets through the skies without approval. They were state-activated Air National Guard pilots flying those jets. Now, another thing. I mean, is it safe from what you're describing, is it safe to describe the politicians of Puerto Rico as basically the mafia?
In some instances, some of the little small municipality governments were kind of like that. And they wanted FEMADIS to drop off supplies, and they said, we'll take care of distributing them. And FEMA kind of said, well, you didn't really have a plan to do any of this stuff before. Why would we drop this stuff off here? How are you going to distribute it? You don't have any vehicles that can go through washed out areas or go through high water areas. And so how are you going to distribute this stuff to the people that need it? And when they got no answer, they basically said, well, tell you what, we'll just go ahead and distribute this stuff. Because what would have happened was that stuff would have gotten hoarded, and the people that were in the have arena would have gotten it, and the people that really needed it wouldn't have got it.
So yeah, it's safe to basically describe them as the mafia. Now the mayor of Puerto Rico, we know that she's under investigation and possibly indictment for her conduct during the hurricane. Now, how much of a pain in the butt was she to FEMA itself?
Oh, a huge. She was a constant impediment to the relief efforts, just due to the fact that she wouldn't attend the meetings so that she could help assist with what needed to be delivered where. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. You know, you could have everything you needed, but if you don't know where to take what, you know, what particular supplies. Who needs water? Who needs food? Who needs clothing? Who needs sheltering? You know, if you don't know exactly where to go and who to talk to, then how do you distribute stuff? You really can't. You can't be effective. So that was a big hindrance, trying to figure out, you know, who needed what, where to go. You know, there was no points of distribution that were previously identified as to this is absolutely where we want that stuff to go. And I don't think that they... From kind of their response, I don't think they ever really thought that, well, yeah, we're going to get, you know, whacked by a smaller hurricane, and then a few months later get whacked by a bigger hurricane. And then now what do we do? But you're right in Hurricane Alley. You know, it's like Oklahoma saying, yeah, you know, I don't know what to do about tornadoes. You know, I'm in Tornado Alley here. You know, a small tornado came through, and now the big one comes through, and okay, I'll just throw my hands up and, you know, I'll play politics and do my thing rather than taking care of the people that I was elected to represent.
So she was playing strictly politics?
Well, absolutely.
We'll be back. Don't go anywhere, folks.
You're listening to The Rod Eccles Show. Let truth be told.
See that cute little dog in the pet store window? Chances are it came from a puppy mill, a breeding facility that forces caged, neglected, and often sick dogs to churn out puppy after puppy to be sold for profit. Meanwhile, millions of wonderful, healthy pets end up in animal shelters. This leads to the killing of more than 9,000 by the end of today. But with one simple choice, you can help. Just by deciding to adopt instead of purchase your next pet. Animal shelters are full of amazing pets looking for a home. When you adopt your new best friend, not only are you saving a life, you're taking a stand against puppy mills. When your friends see the smart choice and impact you've made, they adopt their next pet and share with five of their friends, who share with five more. Before long, thousands get involved. Pet stores stop selling dogs from puppy mills, and even more lives are saved. And with your help, we can save them all. Visit bestfriends.org/puppymills to learn more.
As a mother, you don't want to have to worry about this bill is coming, but then she needs this chemo. That's a decision you shouldn't have to make.
It's a huge burden lifted financially, and so it allows you to give singular focus to your child. I've never known a hospital that takes care of their patients so thoroughly.
That was the first thing I was like, how are we going to do this? When they told us that we didn't have to pay a single bill, I was like, wow. They pretty much have saved us.
It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders. And now your focus is supporting this child.
There is not another hospital like St. Jude. The patient care is unmatchable. It saved my life. It saved my daughter's life. It saved our family.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures. Saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand